LMB's audio diary for the 1st of July, 2023. It is a Saturday. Yeah, today is Saturday. And I have just hit the dump and now I'm heading into town, ultimately to pick up Mrs. Brox from her job. But if there's enough time, I am going to do a little shopping. We'll see. We'll see what kind of time frame we've got once I get there. I think I'll be fine because it's, I got an hour, 2 hours actually. Yeah, no, I'll be fine. So it is a bright sunny day. It is a hot day. We're in the beginning of a heat wave out here. It's supposed to be in the 90s in the next couple of days. Today it was only hitting up into, what do I got, 88 degrees according to the car. See what the car, you know, if that's real or not, I don't know, but that's all Fahrenheit. Sorry to people using a rational thermometer system, you know, people who are doing the metric thing. We're still stuck in the Stone Ages here, but anyway, yeah, it's gonna be hot, it's gonna be hotter in the next couple of days. Down in the Phoenix area, they're looking at upwards of 120, you know, 118 to 120, something like that. It's going to be brutal down there. So, anyway, yeah, it's a bright, hot day. There's a bit of a breeze, but it's not very windy. And that's good because when you have very hot weather and a lot of wind, the wildfire danger is very, very high in situations like that. So we're doing okay so far. Knock wood. So let's see. What have I been up to? I had voices to do for Edict Zero, episode 6 of season 6. I did my main character voice and then I did a bunch of background voices. Finally, I said, it took a lot to prepare for that, and I had a lot of other shit going on at the same time, so I finally did get that done, though, the other day, and sent those up to Jack Kincaid, so I was happy, because that was kind of weighing on my head, because I told him, I said, I'll get these to you on this day, and I missed that day, and I said, oh, man, sorry, it's been crazy, which it was. And I'll try to get it to you, you know, on this day. And then I was like, that didn't happen. Because that's not like me. I'm usually, not only do I hit my deadlines, I'm usually very early when it comes to submitting my lines. But, oh, well. Anyway, I got those lines in before he made the official call for the 606 lines for people to, 606 being season 6, episode 6. He made the official call for 606, I think this morning. So, you know, he's like, I'm working on this now. So get those in, you know, basically. But all my lines are in. Everything I committed to is in, and I'm ready to do more if he needs me to. And I think it's only 3 episodes after this, or 2, something like that. Very soon, it'll be done. Not sure what I'll do with myself at that point. Maybe I'll look around for another show. I don't know if anybody's doing shows anymore. Is anybody doing audio dramas anymore like this? You know, satellite recording? Or is that era over? I don't really know. I used to really have my finger on that pulse, you know, but the community kind of fractured and went a lot of different directions. And a lot of people very deliberately went to monetizing, which I think is smart, actually. I think it's very smart because, you know, once you start to get into audio drama, you find out how much work it is, and it becomes really, really hard to continue it without something to keep you going, you know? So people that have found a way to monetize, I say they were the smart ones. So, and even if you do that, it's very, very hard. So, you know, yeah, a lot of those things that get paywalled or restricted in some way, you know, or loaded up with ads or this or that. I don't know. But, yeah, there's a downside to it all. And I don't know that anybody's figured out a really good way to do it. But, you know, audio in America, anyway, audio entertainment has always been loaded with ads. Eventually, it tends to get loaded with ads. And yeah, you can search around and find, you know, audio stories and audio drama that doesn't have, you know, the usual bloat of ads and, you know, begging for subscriptions and Patreons and everything else. Yeah, they're out there, but you gotta really, you know, more and more you gotta look for them, and more the really fine, high quality content is moving over to platforms like Audible and, you know, such like. So, I think most of us saw that was going to be the way of the world back when I was, you know, really heavily involved in the scene, but now I just sort of putter along doing my own thing, and I'm not part of any real communities, you know, I don't do social media at all, so I don't really understand how things have really evolved. I don't have a real feel for that, but every now and then I'll hear people talk about how things are, at least from their own points of view, and I don't know, it's not surprising. It's a little disappointing, but it's not surprising. But anyway, there might be somebody out there who's still doing work that, I don't know, I can throw my voice at. Just to, you know, just to keep my hand in it. Just to keep my hand in it. But anyway, yeah, I worked on a very little bit, but I worked on the next chapter of All He Surveys Volume 1, the audio version of that, last night, and I'll do some more tonight and just stay focused on that. The audio stream for Anon Radio on midnight Friday UTC still going okay. We'll be up to chapter 19, I think, 18 or 19 of Street Candles this next week. So that's moving along. That's definitely moving along. After that, I'll do, I think after that I might throw some short stories at the feed or at the radio stream, and just, you know, go from there. That of course, just as a reminder, that is a internet radio stream. So, and if you're a fan of Star Drifter stuff already, you're not missing anything, because I'm just rebroadcasting Star Drifter over that feed. But not everybody, you know, I don't think anybody who listens to that, and there aren't many, it's, I think, single digits usually, they're not familiar with Star Drifter at all. So, whatever, I don't care. And one of the beauties of it is they archive everything, and then when they have open spaces, they'll sometimes throw old shows from, you know, older hosts up on the stream. So maybe in the future someone will hear something and like it. That would be nice to reach out through time. So yeah, that's that. I think I told you that the Tottenberg newsletter is now done. That was completed last week. So no more Tottenberg. We told the whole story, beginning to end, of, you know, conceiving the concept and then finally delivering on the final image for the role-playing game. So that's not bad, right? That's not bad. And I don't know what else I have going on. Have I seen anything recently? Well, I recently rewatched, and I don't know why I got it in my head, but I recently rewatched the film Zoot Suit, which was an adaptation of a stage production by the same name. It starred Edward James Olmos, Captain Adama from the rebooted Battlestar Galactica, but he was very young when he did this. This was back in 79, I think, is when this came out. And he was amazing, amazing. He plays El Pachuco in Zoot Suit, and it covers a period of time in Chicano culture in Southern California. Over us, it doesn't just stretch over a couple of days, but there are pivotal couple of days that encompass the thing called the Zoot Suit Riots that happened in 1942, I think it was. And I won't go into the history of that. You can look it up. Just look up Zoot Suit Riots and you'll get everything you need to know. Pretty shameful period in American history. We got a lot of those, and this wasn't as bad as some that were, you know, out and out villainy. This was bad and humiliating and not great. And a sterling example of racism in America during that time. But anyway, that is a backdrop, really. That's a backdrop, but it's used as a depiction of the racism, the rampant racism that was going on during that time. And it has to do with something, a particular murder case that occurred that the protagonist of the play gets involved in. Edward James Olmos, as I say, he plays El Pachuco. And a Pachuco was a someone, there were Pachucos and Pachucas, and male and female versions of people that followed a particular subculture, and they spoke their own dialect of Spanish called Quelo. And Quelo was a combination of Spanish and English and other influences, including Native American stuck in there. And it was, at the time, it was kind of like, in a way, it was kind of like the emergence of the hip-hop scene in later decades, right? But specifically, more or less focused on the Chicano culture along the border to, you know, border between Mexico and the United States. And this was at a time when that sort of stuff wasn't really embraced very well. Well, hip-hop wasn't either when it first came out. That was definitely considered a subculture among Black and urban youths, right? And it wasn't, it took decades for it to spread out to become part of the American tapestry, a part of American culture, as legitimate as anything else. And I mean, if people are following it, it's legit, but you know what I mean? The perception of it in mainstream America. So, the Zoot Suit is the most iconic symbol of the Pachucos, and it was denigrated, it was vilified as a symbol or a sign of delinquency or criminal behavior, drugs and, you know, gangs and all this other stuff. And that really wasn't the case. I mean, some, like anything else, you know, some of the Pachucos were rough characters, but most of them were just mostly kids. And it wasn't just Pachucos. Now, you have to understand that the Zoot Suit really started in among African-Americans of that time. And it spread to other cultures, including white America. You know, there were a lot of white Zoot Suiters back in the day. And, so like hip-hop, it spread out fairly quickly. It had its influence on American culture and then sort of faded, but never really went away, like many subcultures that gained a great deal of popularity and even infamy to a degree in their time period. You'll always find pockets of them. So you do still find Pachucos and Pachucas in various areas in and around Southern California and really along the border, you know, border areas with Mexico. They still exist. They dress a particular way. They have certain hairstyles, including pompadours and all this other stuff. In some ways, you see them now, and you will just think they're dressing vintage, right? And which they are, especially if they're, you know, if they're holding true to, you know, the old Zoot Suit culture. They're dressing vintage, but it isn't just a vintage look. It's a very particular statement about race, about culture, about pride, and I just find it fascinating. Now, I'm not Hispanic. Now, I married into a Puerto Rican family. But this particular, Pachucos and Pachucas are not associated with Puerto Ricans, right? It is primarily a Mexican-American thing. Pachucos, specifically. The Zoot Suit was actually all over the place in America. But Pachucos and Pachucas are Mexican and Mexican-Americans. And or people highly influenced by that culture, subculture. So I just find it very, very fascinating. I read a scholarly work called Pachucos and Pachucas in Tucson some time ago. I described it. I reviewed the book a long time ago. But I don't know. Every now and then, I want to see this all again. Now, I've seen the film Zoot Suit before, and it's got fantastic music, absolutely fantastic music. It's a great story. I didn't even talk about the movie, but it's got a great story. It's got a really weird experimental sort of narrative structure. I don't know that it was entirely successful, but the story itself is really, really good, and the performances are amazing. Edward James Olmos plays El Pachuco. He is the embodiment, the symbolic embodiment of the Pachuco, right? So he's not a person. He's a character that more or less exists in the main protagonist's head, right? He is the embodiment of Pachuco culture, Pachuco pride, right? Pachuquismo, they called it, which was like, you know, machismo, but it was the Pachuco version of it, right? So that, you know, the coolness, the ultimate coolness of the Pachucos. And he exists there, and he's always testing the main character. He's always pushing him. He's always mocking him, you know, whenever he shows any kind of weakness, any kind of anti-Pachuco behavior, you might want to say. It's really a brilliant concept. Brilliant, brilliant concept. So, a Shakespearean-style character in every way. In every way. And I saw an interview with Olmos that he recorded decades later. But he said one night, the Royal Shakespeare Company came over. They flew the entire company over, couldn't be the entire company because that's, I think that's hundreds of people, but they, you know, whoever, I think at that time it was like a snapshot of the Royal Shakespeare Company at that time, and flew them over specifically to see Zoot Suit. And afterwards in the green room, the director of the Royal Shakespeare Society said to Olmos, you know, you have created the first American character that could walk out onto a Shakespearean stage. In other words, the character is highly, highly dramatic and highly embodying, you know, highly symbolic, right? This is a character that Shakespeare could have written, in other words, had he been familiar with the Pachuco culture. And he wrote characters like that for other cultures, you know? So, at any rate, Zoot Suit is the name. It's an old film. As I say, the narrative style is strange, and it was a weird choice. It's staged like it was a play, which works, if that's what you stick with, but it's also staged like it's a film. So when so you get flashes of the audience, but it's not a real audience, it's a fake audience. If you're a Star Trek fan and you're, you got good eyes, you'll see Chakotay sitting in the audience watching Zoot Suit. Doesn't have the tattoo, obviously. It So that part of it, the narrative side, and I know why it was done. I know why he did it. And it's primarily because at certain points, they break the fourth wall, not talking directly to the audience, but using the audience as an example of the wider American culture that is looking at the Pachucos and judging them. And I see what they were after, but I don't think they achieved it using this narrative style. But the performances on the stage, when they're on the stage, and there's dancing and music and just, it's a really, really interesting film, and I highly recommend it. Even if you're not into the concept of the Zoot Suiter and the Pachuco culture or any of that, I think you'd find this interesting. And again, Edward James Olmos is electrifying in this. It's like nothing, you know, if you're familiar with him from, you know, BSG or, you know, going back to Miami Vice or something like that, you haven't seen him until you've seen him in this role, I'm telling you. So anyway, I also sent off for a book that's just called Zoot Suit. It's like Zoot Suit, the... It's either an examination or deconstruction of a particular style. I forget the subtitle, but it's kind of a popularized version of a scholarly work, somewhat similar to the other one, but it's focused specifically on the fashion of the Zoot Suit, right, and where it came from. And it's ascribed actually to a British Earl who came over around the turn of the 20th century, did a big tour of the United States, and he became very popular. He's always in the papers and everything else. And he had a particular English cut, what they at the time, I think, called a long coat, but was not anything like what the Zoot Suits evolved into. And if you're used to the Zoot Suit from, you know, cartoons or something like that, the Zoot Suits that were popular during the heyday of the Pachucos, they weren't really anything like what the cartoonish versions you see much later. They were more tasteful. They were less cartoonish. But anyway, that, you know, styles change, and even the Zoot Suit has evolved over time, and they still sell them. There's still tailors that specifically focus on Zoot Suits and Pachuco, specifically Pachuco fashion. You know, you can spend as much money as you want looking like a Zoot Suiter if you want to, but it's not my culture. And yes, there were absolutely white Zoot Suiters. You know, absolutely. But it's not my culture, and I'm not part of a scene. So, you know, I don't feel I never dress up anyway. But I'm not attracted to this subject because I want to dress like, you know, a Zoot Suiter. I don't want to dress up. I'm a slob. I just wear t-shirts and whatever. But I think the whole thing as a snapshot of American culture, American history, of Hispanic history, I find this fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And if I can find a way to incorporate this into Star Drifter, don't be surprised, because I just find it fascinating. And I would love for more people to be aware of it. So I have another book I'm going to read after what am I in the middle of? Oh, I'm rereading Gondel's Queen by Emily Bronte. And it's a collection of her poems set in her mythical land of Gondel. It isn't just hers. You know, she and her sisters created Gondel and other fantasy lands where they had romantic adventures, you know, more or less played pretend, or they didn't have the game structure, but they had the role play part down pat back then. So it was kind of like a role playing game that she and her sisters created and played. They just didn't have the game part. They just had the role and the storytelling part of it. And they created a kingdom called Gondol. And Gondol and there was another island called Galdain. And these two islands, they had great adventures on. Not fantasy. They were romance adventures. They didn't... There is magical realism in these stories where people have visions of things that are happening or did happen or will happen. So there is some mysticism and magical realism. It's very light, though. We're not throwing fireballs around. We're seeing things. We're having... Wow. This place is mobbed. I'm at Wally World right now. But it's 4th of July weekend. Or not really, because it's Saturday and the 4th won't be till, what, Tuesday or whatever. But people are acting like it's a thing. Anyway, yeah, it's mobbed and I should have expected that. So, yeah, I'm rereading that because I am thinking of creating a setting for role-playing games in Gondol. Because it sounds like it would be cool. And I'm creating a game system specifically for it. It's a side project. It's not getting a ton of attention. But anyway, I think I'm here at Walmart and I think we're going to let it go. I'm going to let it go here. So yeah, that's it for me today because I am not home.